Welcome to Micro College. My name is Jacob Hunt. I'm the director of Thoreau College, a micro college located in Viroqua, Wisconsin, in the Driftless region of the southwestern part of the state. We are a micro college offering semester programs and short courses for young adults, including the Metamorphosis Gap Semester, fall and spring semesters. We are currently accepting applications for both fall and the spring 2024 and spring 2025. Check us out on the internet, thoreaucollege.org. Today, we are really excited to have as our guests Megan Durney and Kim Vaughn, who are part of the leaders and staff at Threefold Community Farm in New York State. Threefold Community Farm is a really important place in the world of biodynamic agriculture and the CSA movement and many other interesting initiatives, including educational programs. Thank you for joining us today, Megan and Kim.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Kim Durney is co-manager of Threefold Community Farm. She collaboratively oversees the vegetable, nursery plant, herb, seed, and bee operations, heads up intern training, is an instructor in their one-year part-time training in biodynamics, and serves as a board member of the Nature Institute. Megan joined the Pfeiffer Center as an intern in 2006 and became a staff member in 2010. In 2014-2015, she studied seed saving and CSA management under Harold Hoven at Rayfield Gardens in Fair Oaks, California, later bringing that knowledge back to the Pfeiffer Center and launching a thriving CSA program now in its ninth season. Kim Vaughn is herdsperson and dairy manager at Threefold Community Farm, heading up the only dairy herd in Rockland County, New York. She supports all aspects of farm operations, fundraising, and administration. Kim first met biodynamics at a year-long course with Harold Hoven at Rayfield Garden in Fair Oaks, California. She soon joined their CSA and became a star volunteer, serving on the steering committee, organizing fundraisers, and milking the cows on weekends. In 2016, Kim stepped away from Waldorf kindergarten teaching to become a full-time apprentice at Rayfield Garden, followed by a summer at Fulcrum Farm in Grass Valley, California, where she helped tend a small herd of Scottish Highland cows. She is currently in her seventh season, living her dream job of professional cow cuddler. So, here on the podcast, we always begin with people's biographies, and specifically where they were during the time of life that of the students we work with here at Thoreau College. So, 18 to 20, maybe 21, 22 in that period. So Megan, maybe if you could start, where were you during that period of life? Who were you with? What were you doing? And what was most impactful and influential on your life during your early adulthood during that period?
So I was in La Crosse, Wisconsin, your neighbor,
Nice.
going to college for public education. I was studying middle school through high school, specifically English, reading and writing, creative writing. And I was also working at the local co-op, preparing food for people, and I was in awe of the beauty of the colors of the produce that I was able to choose from. And just I was waking up to the organic farming movement, food access, and just really how it felt to eat food that was safe and healthy for you. I was definitely searching. I was hopping kind of from church to church in my college town, trying to find a spiritual path. And that was kind of a seed that was planted that has continued to grow. Then I was looking for something from the outside in to fill me, and I would say through the years, I think it's now definitely more within, but at that time, that was where I was at. And I met, interestingly, when I graduated college, I was subbing at local schools in the area, and I ended up going to a local coffee shop in La Crosse, just as I normally did, and I saw a sign for a Waldorf initiative close by for interested parents, and something pushed me to go to that meeting. Although I knew nothing about Waldorf education, I was not a parent, but I went to that meeting, and by the end of that meeting, I had a job. at the local Waldorf Initiative as an aftercare provider. So working with younger children and also assisting in the kindergarten. So I met Anthroposophy and Waldorf Education, and it was an amazing experience, a very humanizing experience, I would say. And I was grateful to learn about this because in college they did not teach us about Waldorf Education. So that was a huge seed that was planted that obviously took root. And the last thing that really sticks out is that I served in an AmeriCorps program doing community service in southeastern North America. And I did a lot of environmental work out there. And I really started to think about what could heal nature and at the same time heal human beings. This was a very living question for me, and again, a seed. So kind of at that time, I look at that time in my life and I think of this person seeking, really seeking a spiritual path, finding her way into kind of environmental work, like working with like healthy food, and then this star of Anthroposophy kind of coming in through the educational stream and seeing this impact on these young children was really beautiful.
Wonderful. Yeah. Have you had any experience with agriculture growing up or as a young person?
My parents had a garden, but supposedly, if you ask my mom, I never helped with that. I was just playing around the garden. So that was my agricultural experience. So no, I at that time, that age period of my life, I did not have any agricultural experience. It was a little bit after. It was in my when I was about 25, 26 when I started.
Nice, nice,
Yeah.
nice. And how did you get interested? How did you know that you wanted to or were interested in being a teacher?
I think because I had some teachers who really impacted me, and really, I had a soulful education in that way, connecting to the teachers. And I chose the subject I chose because the realm of reading and writing really kind of allowed kind of my inner life to awaken more than other subjects, and the teachers in those realms really touched me. So I wanted to, I guess I wanted to follow suit, and I love working with people. And yeah, I think that was kind of what got me into it initially.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kim, what about you? What were you doing when you were in that period of life, 18, 19, 20, 21 years old? Where were you and what were the big influences on your life during that period?
Well, I think I want to trade what I did and pretend that I was Megan. It sounds like such a like a deep quest that happened during that time for her, which I envy. I was not a great student in high school and didn't really seriously apply to college. So I ended up going to community college and not staying there for very long either. So I was seeking independence more than education at that time. I kind of had this sense, this maybe foolish sense at that point, being so young, of wanting to kind of fast track my life somehow, and I was really economically driven and yeah, wanting to create my own independency through work. So I was working at a bank and then at a like a securities firm and things like that, and doing like very materialistic things. I would say my spiritual quest, it's funny when Megan and I share our biographies with each other, the church hopping thing happened for me too, but it happened for me in like elementary, middle school, high school years. Like, I had already done that, and I knew that spirituality was a strong factor in my life, but not, I came to find out, not organized religion at all. So anyway, back to the 18 to 21 year period, it was really just I was wanting to be out on my own, and I didn't have any educational goals or necessarily any career goals. And when I was about 20, I met someone that I ended up marrying when I was maybe 22, so very young, and just kind of launched into a family life and a few different careers in all of that. So I kind of didn't go through my real adult self-exploration thing until much later. It's kind of a delayed development kind of a thing. Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think you are you're both there. You're at the Threefold Community Farm. This is, as I mentioned, an important place. And also, yeah, there's a lot of things going on there, a lot of different separate initiatives gathered around the one center there. So maybe to start off with, if you could just give a picture of your place. So this is not too far outside of New York City. What kind of place is it? And can you just give a picture for a person who doesn't know anything about it? What kind of place is it?
Yeah, it's a very interesting kind of vortex of things going on. We're about a 45-minute drive over across the Hudson River from New York City. So very accessible to all kinds of interesting scenes out there. But we're embedded in this very suburban neighborhood, and our farm is a little bit of an oasis. It's almost treated like a public park. So there's a lot of people from inside the Threefold Educational Foundation community, as well as the Rudolf Steiner Fellowship Foundation community, which is this elder care community. And we are an organization that sits between those two foundations. And the land that we work is owned by some of it by each of those organizations. And then the community that surrounds us, which is a really rich tapestry of folks from the Orthodox Jewish community, folks from the BIPOC community. It's just a really rich world right around us, but we kind of live in this little bubble of anthroposophical endeavors here on the farm. But it's nice that the farm creates this this permeable barrier, this influx of people who just want to come and enjoy what we have here. So it's about the two properties between Threefold and the Fellowship are about 200 acres. That includes all the buildings and the institutions and all of that. And what we farm is about 50 acres that's kind of in pockets around that community. So we're a little bit spread out with what we're doing. The main farm where we're sitting right now is a 33-acre farm that's known as the Duryea Farm because it was last owned by the Duryea family, and they'd had it for a couple centuries before the fellowship bought it. So that's 33 acres, and it's kind of where our main vegetable growing field is. It's where our cows and the majority of our pastures are. It's where our CSA shed lives and our dairy barn and our farm store. So for us, this is kind of the main hub. And then there's the Pfeiffer Garden down on Hungry Hollow Road, which is almost in the main heart of the Threefold campus, right across the street from Green Meadow Waldorf School, from Sunbridge Institute, from the Arrithmy School, the Threefold Cafe, Hungry Hollow Co-op's up the road. So it's Otto Specht School, Endeavor 21. So it's more centrally located to the hubbub of our community. And then we have what's called the North End, which is another vegetable field. Our horses live up there, and it's a little bit more secluded as well, I would say, kind of up on a hill. So we get around.
And this land up here, it's at the height of the property. You can see the sunrise and sunset beautifully, and it's more field scale. So we work with tractors, low till, And we also work with horses, and draft power is something that's very important to us to keep the
Wonderful.
art of draft alive. And then, of course, hand work, especially in the Pfeiffer Garden, but of course, in every field, there's definitely a certain amount of hand work as well. But each place kind of has like a mood, carrying that. And here, like Kim was talking about, it's very public. It's like, it's very welcoming, I would say, up here. It's very seen. I always say everybody belongs on the farm. The farm is a place where everyone can contribute. So it's really nice to have a lot of the people stream in and out and maybe lend a hand here and there.
Yeah, I think even as you start to describe the place and the interactions between different aspects of the immediate community, you can see I think one of the powerful things that I've gotten from the economic and social ideas of Rudolf Steiner, it's embodied in the name of the organization there, the Threefold Community, is that agriculture is a cultural activity, right? It's not just an economic activity. It's not just about material needs. It's about the cultural life of a place. And I think that what you're describing there is a really rich and beautiful illustration of that, including educational ventures, but also seasonal festivals and just the life of a community should include the land and the animals and the places where food is cultivated.
Absolutely. And that's definitely a part of our mission and a part of our name being Threefold Community Farm. It's not just because we're a part of Threefold Community, but the community aspect is really just that, like Megan said, everyone who lives around here can participate in some way. And it requires this farm being embedded in a community is the only way that it can really thrive.
Yeah. So wonderful. There's a lot of ideas here for us to unpack here. I think one I want to be sure to frontline here is biodynamics. This is a complicated thing to explain. And listeners to the podcast, including our last episode with Dan McCannon, will have heard this phrase. But I think I'd love to take the opportunity to ask both of you, how would you introduce a person totally fresh to this concept of to biodynamics as a modality of agriculture and how it relates to organic agriculture, permaculture, other things that people might have heard of.
Biodynamics is a difficult thing to define, even for biodynamic farmers. So I'm going to let the one who's been doing it for 20 years talk about it.
Well, I'll start off a little bit, but I would say biodynamics is a spiritual path or a spiritual task. And you can maybe ask 10 biodynamic practitioners this question, you'll get 10 different answers. However, I think there's something universal that one might hear in all of the answers. And I would say it is a realm of conscious farming. And it's also a drop in the river of spiritual land stewardship, which has existed for eons through various cultures, and we're part of that stream, I would say. We're part of that conversation for sure. So there's this reality that I think as a biodynamic practitioner, I really work with, that the earth's development and health is related to ours. And the earth is a human being who needs love and care, and it's the same for the farm. And I try to think about, like, what is it that makes this farm biodynamic, or what is it that biodynamic folks share in common? And I think what I see in a lot of places, and for us here, is that we try to really, we concentrate on relationships between the different realms of nature, the mineral, plant, animal, and human realm. This reality, if we look at back at or if we can take pictures from people who could see into this the past, that we all shared a united existence together, all these realms at one time. And we've precipitated out through our development, through our ego development, through the earth-specific development. There's been a hardening and an individualizing. So that's happened. We've separated out at a certain point of time from a unity, and now we're seeking kind of renewed relationships and kind of a reunion. So this kind of activity of biodynamic farming in a way is really trying to find the right relationship again between the realms, is one way I would describe it. And also kind of this picture of like the reality of plant life, or the reality of a beehive, or the reality of a farm doesn't have a wall around it, a gate that separates it from the cosmos, separates it from what's deep within the earth, separates it from its whole environment. The influences are always streaming in all the time. And as biodynamic farmers, I think we're helping to perhaps magnify, or I would say maybe working with complementary streams. Kind of a simplest example I would give is just working with kind of warmth and air and earth and water. So for example, if we think about our tomato plants or our fruit trees, we prune them, right, to bring in air and light and warmth so that our fruits can mature. Or if our compost pile is too cold and stagnant, what do we have to kind of, we have to know that, and then we get in there as farmers, and then we turn the pile and we bring in air and warmth. So what we're doing is kind of like supporting the processes for life to thrive and transform in a way. And you can go further working with intimately with what's in the stars with the help of the Stella Natura. So perhaps sowing your seeds right before full moon, and perhaps it's rained even right before full moon, which would be even better, you know, to help the seeds incarnate into the earth and germinate, root with the help of the moon's forces. So there's all these different levels of participation we can have. And I think it's making all of that more conscious, because, yeah, I think it's making all of that much more conscious. And I guess just a couple other things is really working with this, I think a reality that medicine, plant-based medicine, natural medicine, homeopathics, ancient medicines have perhaps worked with is that we as human beings, there's many paths to healing, but that generally what is outside of us and what's inside of us, there are secrets to our own healing, to our own bringing into balance again, that's maybe come out of balance, like seeking a new equilibrium. And we need maybe to be we need a little help from our plant friends. We need a little help to be awakened to that or sensitized to that, so that we can absorb what's in and around us to become whole again or to heal. And I think that's really what biodynamics is about. It's this, again, this path that we're counting the earth to take is to continue to transform. And we also, as human beings, are continually growing and learning and developing. And how do we kind of go on that path together as partners? And I think biodynamics is one way that we can do that.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. It was really rich. When I applied to college, to Deep Springs, which is Deep Springs College, one of the inspirations for what we're doing here at Thoreau, the chair of the application committee was a student, as they always are at Deep Springs, who had grown up in the Kimberton Pennsylvania Waldorf School community by chance, and he asked me to explain biodynamics, which was not fair at all because I couldn't do it at all. But I think, for many people listening to this, much of what you said is it would be new and maybe challenging, maybe intriguing. But I think, what stands out about it to me, and I think the qualities that it takes to do this type of agriculture is really attention to a different level of awareness, particularly attention to the qualities, right? You're talking about warmth and qualities of light, qualities of color, but also flavor and there are things that are not typically measured in a soil sample, for example, that are really important to biodynamics. And so I guess one question that I have, the threefold community there, the Pfeiffer Center, is that just to clarify, is the Pfeiffer Center, I know, has been an educational institution there. Is that still in existence in that name?
To a degree, yeah. So the project that we're working on, this threefold community farm, is a collaboration. So the Pfeiffer Center and the Fellowships Duryea Farm came together as one, as threefold community farm. So it was renamed. The Pfeiffer Center name is still out there, kind of lingering more as our educational arm. So anything that has to do really with the adult education realm, with our part-time training in biodynamics, what we call our year-long course, is still under the banner of the Pfeiffer Center. So it just kind of speaks to that, one of the three legs of our mission, which is education in biodynamics.
Yeah, great. Thanks for that. I mean, so the name Pfeiffer, Ehrenfried Pfeiffer, was a student of Rudolf Steiner and really key person in the development of biodynamics, including the carrying of biodynamics to North America, specifically to the area in Chestnut Ridge and that area. So really important node. And people could read Dan McCannon's book, Eco-Alchemy, about the impact of biodynamics in North America, and it is really key in the history of the organic food movement and the just ecological movement in general, in ways that people are not widely aware of. But I think something that we've been exploring on the podcast also is the training for farmers. There's a real generational challenge of all forms of agriculture, conventional, organic, and biodynamic agriculture, who's going to grow the food in the future, who's going to tend to the lands. So it's very interesting to talk to people at an institution that's been doing this for a long time now. So maybe you could talk about those adult education programs there, and what how are they structured, and what is the scope of what you do, and how do you train someone? How do you cultivate these powers of observation and sensitivity that are required to do biodynamic agriculture?
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with the powers of observation. I think that's the foundation for anything relating to biodynamics. That's kind of the first step that we try to cultivate with our students. So what we offer, as I mentioned just a moment ago, is as a part-time training, is our year-long course. And so that's something that maybe people who are just hearing about biodynamics, interested, maybe always heard about it, but are on a different career path and are carving out time in their lives to explore something they've been interested in for a while. Maybe farmers who are disillusioned by the current state of agriculture and want to be ignited, inspired by something new to them. So they already maybe have a piece of land or a garden. And they want to learn more about what biodynamics is, how to apply it to their space. So people who have something going on in their lives that wouldn't allow them to come to our full-time internship, this part-time training is really wonderful for them. So it's a September through June, one meeting a month, for the first half of the school year, we'll call it. It's 1 day, and for the second half, more or less, it's like 2 days. Starting it with the March course, it becomes a 2-day per month course. So it's a really, yeah, even though it's part-time, it's still a really rich dive into the foundations of biodynamics. Our mentor, Mac Mead, is the one who runs that program. And Megan and I both kind of co-teach at different places in the year about different topics and contribute in that way. But he starts with esoteric science. So he takes you there of the evolution of the planets and how did minerals come to be? How did plants come to be? How did animals, humans, all of that, the evolution that happens there that gives this foundational picture for where we go into in the agriculture course, in Rudolf Steiner's agriculture course, for the realms of nature and how we work with them. So there's typically in each session a good portion of the day in like lecture and study and conversation, and then another good portion of the day spent in practical application. So every fall, the class gets to make the preparations together, and farmers can join in and participate in that as well. And it's a really almost like festival, like I would say. It's a really lovely time to be able to share that knowledge with new learners. You know, we go into composting and seed saving and bee work and large animals, small animals, kind of the whole breadth and depth of what a biodynamic farm can encompass. So that's our part-time course. And then the full-time form of study that we have is our internship, which over the years has taken various forms. When the Pfeiffer Center was just the Pfeiffer Center, it was a full year. And Mac and Megan were the farmers, and then the interns were kind of like the staff. So it was, you know, the two of them and between two and four interns that would stay for an entire year. And as our collaboration has evolved, we've gone from summer internship, and then that led into an extended internship where someone could opt in to stay for a full year. And then this year is the first year we've done a purposefully longer, more comprehensive internship that's going from May through November, so almost a full farming season. So again, it's of course really practically heavy because we're in the farming season, but with everything that we do, there's education embedded. So we're structuring our day and the way that we work with our interns in a way that the land becomes a teacher, not just us. We do explain and we do share while we're working, but we're also really encouraging those powers of keen observation of what's right in front of you and what can you begin to sense when you work closely with a being of the plant or the being of the cow or the horse or the bee that isn't right in front of you, but you can sense exists, maybe the possibility, even a question mark for someone who's just beginning, being open to the possibility that something more than what's in front of you exists. And so, for one example, that I feel is a really deep educational experience that's embedded into almost every harvest session is plant observation, which Megan leads with our team, our staff, and our interns, whoever happens to be around. And it's a practice that we picked up at Raphael Garden with Harald Hoven, that before you harvest from a bed and kind of there's the observational aspect, and then there's the deep spiritual reciprocity aspect that exists in indigenous cultures of acknowledging the plant's personhood before you take from it. So before you just extract, you give acknowledgement and gratitude, and in our form, it's through observation and just standing before a head of cabbage and noticing its shape, its color, it's low to the ground, its broad stretching outer leaves, its tight, closed, firm head. And so we just kind of go through a process of first observing and then sharing a little bit about what we're seeing. And then what maybe can we begin to divine about the gesture of that plant beyond what we can see. And just encouraging our interns and our staff that every time they come across this plant, to try to notice something new about it, try to further that relationship somehow, to try to commune with it in a way, if you will, to really know that being behind the physical being.
Yeah. I think, part of what Kim is saying is like what we try to really communicate in our internship or have it be experienced is that raising life, whether it's plant or animals, is a particular approach. Like biodynamics, I would say, is an approach. It's not a recipe. It's not something you can just like check off the list, but this opening a bed, like in an agriculture course, we're reading it again and studying it every year we study it. But this beginning, starting with gratitude, and Steiner starts with gratitude for the hosts of the course, and this honoring of life outside, and then kind of this connecting here within in your heart and creating space between. For guidance, because once when we're observing an animal or we're observing a plant, using our senses, not making things up, but just sharing what truly we experience through what we see, what we taste, perhaps what we feel, then nature can share their secrets, and then our acting isn't just out of our own will; it's actually a deed that we're guided by something higher, or things that are partnering with us on the farm. So this is all, I feel like, just trying to bring this kind of approach, and maybe what you said, Jacob, before, this like conscious partnership. And this is also why we read the soul calendar each week, these verses that Steiner wrote through the cycle of the year, where we can start to kind of accompany the earth's rhythms, we'll say, and find in ourselves perhaps an essence that lives in nature, and again be guided by more than our own willfulness, because farming can be very willful and without guidance. And and our intern one other thing about the internship program is just also we try to bookend the days, or at least start the day with working with the animals, just kind of coming into the realm of the work with plants through the realm of the animal. It seems that it's helpful that the animal can kind of tap into our wake our soul up a little bit at the beginning of the day.
It has a grounding influence, I think, to
Right.
work with the animal and a way to also meet yourself
Right.
fresh each day, because the animal really, this sounds aggressive, but forces you to be fully present and
Yeah.
not be someone or something that you're not, to leave all your garbage at the door and just be right there. And the animal doesn't let you pretend.
Right.
Yeah.
And we
Yeah, so
think.
that I'm glad that you brought that up. I really wanted to ask you, Kim, about being a professional cow cuddler. but I think that, just to step back from just what you were just saying there, if you look into so working with cattle and with horses was an important part of my education, including in Deep Springs and before. And but if you look at the training for leadership in European culture and Native American cultures and much of the world, working with horses and cattle in some places was a really important part of that. I think for precisely the reason that you're talking about, you must be present if you are on horseback, or you're working with a draft animal, or working with, let's say, working with a dog or something who's trained to do something. Like that's a different state of being. You must be present. You're working with another being whose consciousness you can really experience directly, even without a lot of it's harder to experience the consciousness of a cabbage maybe for some people, but a horse or a cow, right? There's another being there that you can interact with. And but yeah, can you talk about your work there, Kim, with the dairy herd, and how many, what is the herd like, and cows in particular are very important in biodynamics, and I wonder if you can talk a bit about the cow as a as a collaborator in agriculture?
So we have, I think we're still right in saying the only dairy herd in Rockland County. I keep having to check with our inspector to make sure that's still true. And our herd kind of shifted in numbers, but generally speaking, we're between 5 and 10 adult cows, milking cows, and then their requisite offspring, whether they're, new young calves all the way up to yearlings. We have a couple yearling bulls and a yearling heifer. And then a new draft team. We had twins born in November, and they're at draft camp in Connecticut right now, getting a good foundation with a 4-H family to
These
come
are
back and be.
oxen. These are
These
steers.
are oxen. Well, yes, technically
Oxen in
speaking,
training.
they're handy steer. Yeah, they're going to learn some things on the path to becoming oxen. Yeah,
Because
so
you
we got
also
to
have
do
draft
some
horses, is
development.
that right?
We do, yeah. We have two Haflinger ponies, technically, draft horses that we work with on the farm, who are aging and still working to the degree that they can, and getting some things done, but looking at the next generation of draft work coming up behind them. Yeah, so. As Megan said, we kind of ground our day with the animal chore, and our interns get to do blocks of time with each animal. So they really will do a deep dive with the cows for several weeks and get a full handle on what that rhythm is like, and then get a chance to switch and do another deep dive into horses and then a deep dive into bees. So in my realm, it's the cows and yeah, I laughed when you said cow cuddler because just this morning we have a 5-week-old, I think she is now, calf, and we do calf sharing, which means that the calf gets to nurse and stay with the mom, stay with the herd full time for anywhere between a month to 3 months, and but we also milk the cow alongside that. For anyone who doesn't know, dairy cows make way more milk than the calf can safely drink. And the cow can't just hold on to that milk, otherwise it will make her ill. So it is our contract with the animal, with the dairy animal, is to milk them for their comfort and their health. So the calf gets to drink some, and we also get to take some for human consumption. But one of the ways that we get that mama to let down is to have the milk machine on three of her teats and have the baby on one of them. So she's getting her breakfast at the same time that we're milking the other three. And there was some point where she just wasn't getting anything from the quarter that she wanted. And so I kind of pulled her head back a little bit and cleaned the teat off and put it back on the milking machine. And then she like rested her head on my back, kind of, I don't know, like satiated and relaxed way as I was getting the milking machine back on mom. It was really sweet. Anyway, that's just a little highlight of what I get to do with these funny creatures. But I appreciated what you were saying about the leadership quality that it takes to, or even that you learn by being with an animal, also having an educational background in Waldorf education. I talk with my teacher friends about what it is to work with these beings that brings a similar thing as a class teacher with that loving authority. You have to be the boss, but you also have to create this relationship of understanding and respect, and no faking, because they'll call you out on it. They can tell when you're not being authentic, and they will let you know. So it's such an amazing educational experience just from that perspective of human development, to be able to create a relationship of strength and care at the same time.
It has to be inner strength too, right? Because you're not going to be physically stronger
Yes,
than a cow or a horse, right?
you got it. So, and I think that's like a fallacy that a lot of people kind of lean into their physical brute strength right off the bat, and like, oh, I've got to, if I want to be in charge of this cow, I've got to like push her around or smack her real hard with a whip or a stick or something. And it's like, no, actually, if you just know within yourself that you've developed a strong enough bond, a trusting relationship, a reciprocal relationship with that animal, that they are going to just go with you, and you don't need to push or pull or smack or whatever. You're just letting them know it's time to go now. Here we go, and off they go with you. And it's, a little bit of exercise using your etheric forces there too. I kind of like picture a thread at my back as I'm walking in front of them. I don't drive my cows, I lead them. And so I'm just kind of like etherically pulling them along, and they follow me in this beautiful orderly line, just like a row of kindergartners following behind me. And I'm singing them a little song as they come too, conveniently enough. Anyway, it's just an interesting crossover picture between those developmental pictures of the human being and the work with the animal.
So zooming out to the level of the farm, I mean, one of the distinctive ways that biodynamic farmers, going back to Steiner, think about the farm is as a whole organism, right? As a totality, right? And in that, the cow really has a central role to play. The biodynamic preps, make use of the manure and the horns and organs of the cows. Can you talk about, cows specifically, Kim, as a person who's working with them, is in a sense, within the context of the farm as a whole?
The cow is central to biodynamics. I always speak about biodynamics from a much more practical perspective, and I am a spiritual person, and I have those senses too, but my mind always goes to the practical first. So of course they're creating the fertility cycle for the farm. And they're creating it, and they're also partnering in it. So all the microbial life that the cow depends on for its gut health, and the soil depends on for its digestive health as well, and the compost pile for its digestive health, is all kind of interrelated, right? That digestive process that the cow is able to create this cycle, this relationship between the soil and the compost and the cow and the plants. And the quality of the produce that can be produced out of soil that's worked in that way, treated with homegrown manures, where the cow has created a sensitive relationship with the features of that land, with the finer substances of that land, and in this really miraculous way that I don't fully understand, is able to create a balance on the landscape and give back to the soil exactly what it needs in order to come further into complete health. So if you have healthy soils, you're going to have healthy animals, and then those healthy animals are going to give back and recreate that healthy soil over and over again over time. And your land management really goes into that as well. So we rotationally graze. We don't leave animals just to, open range graze for all summer long. We're moving them in small paddocks throughout the year, to give the plants a rest, and to allow the digestive processes and the soil to really take hold, and the roots of those plants to reestablish and grow back again and create more little solar panels. And the cow does that instinctively, and if there were wild cows still on the land, think of the bison that still exist in wild places. This is that system that mimics something that naturally occurred on this continent, for thousands of years before agriculture took place.
Cool.
Yeah,
So
so I mean, that's the practical aspect.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. Yeah, I think it's really, again, thinking about an educational context, the opportunity to work with livestock is something that is, I think, really was powerful in my own experience, and I think it's a special thing. It's harder to do than having a vegetable garden, let's say, as important as that is. There's so much you can learn from animals.
Yes. And it's also, sorry, this
Go
is
ahead.
Megan. It's also something with we're just many of us are just used to speaking one language. I wish I spoke more languages. But on the farm, I think it's working with animals, especially it's a training and learning a new language that is definitely more relational. And we learn from the animals themselves what how they want to be spoken to in order for them to kind of move or understand. Like for instance, with the cows, there's more of this energy that needs to be moved out of our body through more of the gut area to move the cows and the horse, it's a little higher, it's a little more in the heart. And so it's really interesting to like learn these languages, and also with the bees too, there's a different kind of approach and a language they speak and how they relate to each other. So I think it's beautiful. A lot of the language, if you're not conscious of it, is invisible, but if you wake up to it, it becomes real. So I think that's super helpful with the animals.
Yeah, glad you brought up the bees. I was going to be asking about that as well.
Oh.
So yeah, here's another just key collaborator in agriculture, right? The and also just a powerful one of the things we've been exploring the last semester at Thoreau College are just the political and social and just sort of philosophical metaphors that have been drawn from bees and other insects. And Steiner has a lot to say about bees as well. So I wonder what have you learned from your bee collaborators and what does that language have to tell us?
Yeah, they teach so much. I'm trying to I think this what the beehive is able to share with us is basically a picture of the world around us. It's basically a picture of the environment, like lives in the beehive. And so the bee and also the transformative power of nature and even maybe beingness. The bee is able to work with nature in a way that's dynamic and relational too, that's beneficial for the flower as well as it is taking the nectar. It's also giving back something, formic acid, in order for that flower to continue to stimulate that flower, that plant, and continue to grow. And so there's this intimacy there. But she's able to bring back that nectar, and together as a community, they transform that nectar into many things. One being honey that we know of, and also they create food for the brood. And they also transform it within their own beings, and they create wax out of their own bodies. They create these little slivers of wax, and they build, in a way, they build the substance of their own home. So it's almost a miracle that we see before our very eyes of this transformation. And then this being in working with the bees and opening up a hive and checking on them or what have you, like we did today. It's amazing just the sense of community that you have. Oftentimes, one of our interns just said things like, "Well, we're not like the bees yet. You know, we're this like aspect of working together so dynamically and so beautifully that we're just working in a way for each other for the betterment of something higher." We learn from the bees and yeah, I think
That's an aspirational
aspirational
quality.
quality, yeah. And I think the animals, especially the bees, just really ask us to be, like Kim said, who we are and present. And they'll let you know if they're not feeling that you're present enough.
I'll let you know.
But they're also trying to bring healing to us too. Every single time we get stung, oftentimes we reflect where the bee stung us and often find that we have ailments in those areas. And it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, isn't that similar? Like, I think sometimes with horses or with cattle, but and certainly with bees, if to approach working with them, people need to address some element of fear in themselves and certainly be very present, right?
Yeah.
And that and awake in that
Absolutely.
sense. Yeah. And if you're not present, they'll
It's
wake
with,
you up.
right. Yeah. And I think with all the animals and even the bees, it's finding this kind of center or finding this place in us that is kind of our core that they want us to approach them with. And that's, they actually teach us to find that place, which I think is our spiritual center or, and they're very much our teachers in that.
Beautiful. Yeah, so as we kind of coming towards the end of our hour here, I wanted to make sure that we talked a bit about, so you've described these programs. There's the part-time training, year-long training, and then there's the internship programs. Can you talk about well, just practically how many people are generally doing these in each kind of group or cohort? And then if they're the interns there, where are they living, and what is their kind of lives like?
Yeah, so for our part-time course, we've generally been having about 20 people in each cohort. Definitely room for more.
Again, that starts in
And
September.
that starts in September. September 14th is the first course. And just to say also, it's structured as a year-long course, but we've just as of the last round, we have opened it up so that there are some standalones within the year long that you can come and take that you don't have to take the whole thing. So if you are interested in a particular topic or just don't have time to come every single month, there you can see on our website, there are certain ones that you can take just kind of as standalone that you can register for one as if it was its own workshop. So yeah, and since that one isn't typically overnight, it's just people come and go. And then for the internship, we take between two and three interns each season, and their housing is supported by the farm. So within the Threefold community, there's a kind of a nice
Housing.
dorm. I always call it a dorm, and that sounds like not the right word. Megan just used the word co-housing, which sounds so much nicer. I'm gonna say that from now on.
Yeah.
Thank you. Where you have a private room, shared kitchen, shared bathroom, and what maybe there's about 40 rooms in that building. And so the farm interns stay there. The farm pays for their rent.
Okay.
And yeah, our interns this year for the first time are getting a full $15 an hour. So it's pretty exciting that we've met our goal of having a more kind of socially just internship program available where it's not just for people who are maybe financially supported at home or through savings that can take a year of their life off to come and learn something new, but that we can actually pay people what's now the New York State minimum wage to support them being
Okay, great. Could you just say what's the process like for applying to this, and when does that usually happen in the year for the internship?
Yeah, so we open up the internship. Yeah, it's Again, it kind of varies depending on what we decide we're going to do next season or the needs for next season. So typically in the wintertime, we open up the application portal on our website. So you start just by filling out a simple questionnaire, giving us a little information about yourself, kind of short answer questionnaire there. And then we set up usually a Zoom interview. Some people are not local. If you happen to be, you can come for a farm visit and do an interview in person, where we just kind of get to know you a little bit better, answer more questions about the internship and kind of the structure of our day, our week, our season. And yeah, just kind of select what we're looking for. Actually, what we always tell people is that farming is hard enough. It's a really difficult job. And so the last thing we want is to add additional difficulty by not being able to work well together socially. So the social aspect of what we do is almost more important than the practical aspects of farming. So when we're putting together a cohort of interns, we're not just looking for like who has the most experience and who could give the farm the most of themselves, but like who needs to be here together right now? Who would make a really good team? Who do we predict will be supportive of one another or complementary to one another? Who will jive well with our staff that exists here? But we really also want to create an experience for these interns together, because this is something that they're sharing in this moment in time that will be unique to just those folks who are there together.
Beautiful. Well, I really want to thank you both, Megan and Kim, for spending some time with us and for the work that you're doing there. Thank you so much for telling us about it.
Thank
Yeah, thanks for
you.
having us on. It was so nice to talk to you.
Thank you.